You are listening to Wells Tech, episode 565, recorded on Tuesday, September 4th, 2018. Donuts for All. Wells Tech is a weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Today we talk about productivity and especially how bullet journals have kind of changed the landscape a little bit. Sally talks about her analog approach to bullet journaling, so you're not going to want to miss that. We also did a survey of Wells Tech listeners about their particular tools of choice when it comes to task management. Very interesting conversation and contributions by them. Great picks, ministry resources, and all the other things that go along with the Wells Tech podcast. Stay tuned. I have Sally right across the table again today. That's quite the honor. You've decided to hang around.
So. I have.
Despite all the rain.
Yep. A little bit excited because we're going back to Mary D. this evening. We've been staying with our kids, but we're going to be camping again. So back home.
Right. Looking forward to that?
I actually am. I've missed our little environment that got used to over the summer. So what's been,
just compare the office environment. So here, you're kind of in a traditional cube setup along with your coworkers. What have you noticed as the biggest difference? Any adjustments?
I think it's noisier here.
Is it?
and it's not all day long noise, but I mean, there's more distractions. People are walking by and talking, and it's just different when you're used to really quiet
environment. More solitude, right?
So, yep. Yeah.
I think there's pluses and minuses. Sometimes I really enjoy, because occasionally I will, you know, maybe work from home depending on my schedule or whatever, and it's definitely a different vibe. And usually when I'm working from home, I'm the only one there. So mm-hmm. it's dead silence. But there certainly are a lot less distractions.
Yeah. I love the face to face though. You can't beat
especially when you're in project work, I would think, and the interaction is good. And I think for probably most of our listeners, they are in kind of a team, you know, potentially team environment, although I'm sure there's a lot of pastors out there who spend some solitary days in those smaller congregations, especially where there's not a traditional office and secretary and whatnot.
So definitely. So speaking of pastors, I have a funny story to tell you. My oldest started seminary last week, and he was gushing about what a great experience it was all week long, very excited. And he came home with a story, maybe first day, I'm not sure, where the guys had been in class, and they had just gone over a very serious discussion about not letting their cell phones go off in class and disrupt the class. So the penalty for that, apparently, at the seminary is that you have to buy donuts for the whole class. So, you know, they had this big discussion.
It's one of those seminarians are a little plumpy.
Yeah.
A little plumpier in the first year.
Anyway, they went to their next class, and just a few minutes into class, somebody's cell phone went off. And they were all like, oh, no, I hope it's not me. As it turns out,
it's a professor.
It was the professor. And upon further investigation, they realized he had said something about Assyrians. So you can guess that Siri chimed in response to the word Assyrians. So, you know, be careful what you wish for, professors, because you might have to buy donuts for the whole class.
Yeah, that happens more. Does that happen to you?
I have had it jump into conversations. Actually, it was kind of a running gag when Kevin got his Pixel phone that OK Google would, and we were having a dinner discussion, and somehow Google responded to one of our voices. So then we were excited to be able to control his phone. And he immediately shut that down.
It's a whole new world.
Yeah, for sure.
So speaking of tech and donuts, I don't know how that transitions nicely, but we're here talking about task management. And we've been talking about productivity all summer. When we were reviewing the book, Eat That Frog, we concluded that last week and felt this would be a nice little follow-up because sprinkled throughout the months of summer, we had kind of off and on talked about our own task management systems, and you and I kind of do the same things,
sort of,
yes, but we both are using something called a bullet journal sometimes shortened to Bujo, B-U-J-O. Mm-hmm. And it's been around for some time, and we had a show on it, what show was it? 491, way back April 4th, where we talked to Steve Daly.
Yeah, April 4th,
2017.
So like a year,
sorry.
Year and a half
ago. Yep,
mm-hmm.
So quite
Pastor
a while
Steve
ago.
Daly, yep.
So we thought maybe it would be worthwhile to talk about that and maybe even bring in some other current task management tools, just kind of what is the spectrum out there? Because it seems like a new one's born every day. And along with this kind of conversation about bullet journals, we threw out a survey asking people what they did. And there were a couple that came back with bullet journal, of course, but all kinds of other stuff, too. So we thought we'd kind of enliven the discussion and explore all the corners. But today, in particular, we want to focus on Sally and her approach to bullet journals, and then part two, which will be next week. We're learning how to tease shows now after 500 right? You're going to talk about how I do bullet journals, which I'm more of a rookie than Sally. So we're going to hear from the more experienced bullet journaler, and then there's other big differences between our approaches as well. But that's kind of the appeal of a bullet journal. There really is no one right way.
Right. Very versatile, very personal in how you adopt bullet journaling, which is a good place to kind of start the discussion. You
what
mentioned,
is it, right?
that we interviewed Pastor Steve Daly back in April of 2017. He gave us a really great write-up. So we're going to have a link in the show notes. You guys should definitely check that out, where he described his process for bullet journaling. And if you go to bulletjournal.com, you can, kind of see how it started and what the process is that they recommend. In a nutshell, they recommend keeping a list of things and checking them off as you get them done. And some organization things around that, having an index, starting each day with the date and things,
right.
Numbering your pages so you can find what page it's on, et cetera, et cetera. There's a whole system there. And really key to that is the checking off or Xing it if you decide not to do it, or putting an arrow if you're moving it to another day, or, kind of these little bullets that you put next to your things to do. So that's where the name came from. Really basic, really not real pretty, just a list. And I had been using a paper planner for a long time, and so over time I kind of adopted that shorthand mm-hmm. type checking and arrows and X's and things like that. So in a way, I adopted some of that bullet journal mentality into my existing planner. This was just more of a traditional planner with the days all mapped out
right.
for you during the year and things
like
that.
Like you get a day timer or some kind of setup like
exactly,
that.
Right? Exactly. Mm-hmm. So what I've found, though, if you frequent, especially female bullet journalist, is that they found a very big opportunity to be creative and artistic in their daily planners by using the bullet journal method, but then taking it to a whole new level with doodles and calligraphy and stickers and on and on and on.
Right.
And so you could get really far down a rabbit hole with people that are doing that kind of thing, just for the sake of being beautiful on paper, which is a really fun thing to do. Unfortunately, I'm not that artistic. So I do occasionally use stickers. I think I mentioned this summer I got a nifty little printer that
right.
prints photos that are stickers that I can put in my bullet journal. I actually have one this week of a breakout room that we got out of on Sunday over the holiday weekend. So fun stuff.
Nice.
But for me, it was more about getting a little more flexibility mm-hmm. than the printed day-to-day scheduling.
Right.
And that's where I kind of branched out a little, is doing my own layouts for my weekly planning.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I keep it pretty simple. I do spend some time on that, but it's relaxing and artistic, creative kind of time, just doing a very basic layout. I think we could throw a picture in the show notes of,
sure.
of what I do. And I have two extra columns, And on one side, I put things to do for work, and on the other side, I put things to do for home or personal. I have an area for menu planning, but then I pretty much leave it open on my desk all day long. It has all my meetings and things as I come up with those during the week. I add to the list and things. I write down some really important to-do things or big events on the days, but otherwise I rely on kind of the side list for my day-to-day tracking of what I need to get done that week. And then the concept of moving it forward to the next week if I didn't complete it. There's a space on the next week for me to write those as well.
So you deal with one spread per week, or how does it evolve over the course of a week?
Yeah, I pretty much just use one spread per week, although I think I'll be making some changes in the future. But right now, that's what I'm doing. It's just one spread. I've got Monday through Thursday on one side and Friday through Sunday, plus an area for menu on the other side.
Okay.
And keep it pretty simple that way. I haven't ever been someone who's used monthly calendars very much. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't really want to dedicate the space to a grid of a monthly calendar to write things on. I just go with the daily stuff. And in the back, there's extra room, so I do things like my bill paying schedule and different goals and things. I do have a yearly calendar drawn out back there, but to be honest, I haven't used that either. It's just a nice blank calendar. So the one thing that I don't do here is I don't use it so much for note-taking.
I was going to ask, where do you take those?
And I have a variety of answers to that. I have just a plain old spiral-bound notebook that I use for work notes. Mm-hmm. And when I'm at the end of it, I keep it for a couple of weeks, and then I just toss it. But that way I can look back a few weeks if I needed to go back to something. And then I have some other fun notebooks that I use. Like I have one that's dedicated just to RVing and all the notes I want to take around our mileage and our to-do list and things like that. And then I have another general one. I think one thing that I've been really tied to is having one book that's for a whole year.
Right.
And in the future, I think I'm going to get away from that. And the bullet journal doesn't tie any kind of time frames to the pure bullet journal. You just use your notebook till it's full and you go on to the next one. So I think I'm going to be more that way. Like I'll still make a weekly spread, but then I'll have pages intermixed that have other things or note taking or whatever in one notebook instead of dividing it up into so many extras.
Did you say you had an index at the beginning? You don't do that.
I don't, or I haven't, but I mean, it's really just a year's worth of weekly spreads. So at the beginning of the year, I just basic named them.
Yeah. So how you find stuff is basically chronologically.
Right.
So you have to remember
exactly
when it happened.
And if I know something's coming up in 3 months, I'll just do a little post-it note, which I should mention the brand. I usually an Erin Condren notebook, and they have nice little things that pop into the spirals with, you know, like a dashboard of post-it notes and things like that, that you can grab and stick on a page. And they have other swag. That's part of getting into this, is that you can spend a lot of money if you do all the fun things you see on YouTube and that kind of thing. I have just one really small, stencil sheet that I use to draw little birthday cakes or airplanes or whatever creative things, because I'm not an artist by any stretch of the imagination. So I do use some stencils, but they're small enough to keep in my journal. And then I keep other things in the back, like I'll have some stamps in there. I actually have my ticket to Maker Faire, because that was like a really important day of my life. And I saved the ticket, and I got a Nikola Tesla calling card at Maker Faire, which I thought was super cool. So yeah, I have some cards that I can mail to people on when needed or whatever. I keep just a variety of things in there, and I try to make it fun. I use Pilot Frixon pens. They're just the bomb diggity. I love them. They erase, so that's really nice, because I want it to be neat and I'm not super neat. And I usually use like a color scheme each month. I'll change, you know, the colors of my pens or whatever. So, and I occasionally look at other layouts and change the layout. I've done a couple of different things in this year's. But this was really the first year that I broke away from just buying the planner that was all laid out for me, and I've been doing my own thing. So
do you take it everywhere? Does it fit in the purse? How do you kind of make it? Is it a constant companion?
Well, I live in an RV and I don't go many places. So yes, it's constantly with me. I do, when I worked from home, my work desk and my home desk were the same. It was always there. It was always open. I was always making notes. As far as carrying it with me in my purse, I don't necessarily do that. It's a 7x9 inch size. They do make a larger one at Erin Condren that's like 8.5x11. Mm-hmm. So I might consider getting bigger, but desk space is kind of prime real estate. So I like this size. So,
but if you're out and about, let's say, now it might be a little bit different now, but if you're at church or whatever and you're talking to somebody or, you know, and you need to kind of identify a task that you don't want to forget, what do you do?
I carry a little 2-inch by 3-inch notebook. Okay. Actually, I carry a couple of them. One of them, I take notes during sermons. I've always done that. And, so I have one that I just regularly take notes in for sermons. And then the other one is my kind of go-to. I have grocery list in there and things like that. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of outside of my planner.
But those are paper as well.
Yes, okay. Paper all the way.
Well, that's what I'm going to ask you about. So I know you have tasks that you manage through, let's say, a Trello board in other places. So there is some digital, there's a digital nature to your work. And when you're working with others, that's really the only way to kind of do that. Mm-hmm. Where do those paths cross?
Yeah, I think what I put in my paper planner is more like big picture kind of things. For instance, I know I need to work on a particular file or test a particular set of forms. I'll just write test. I won't write the 5 things I need to test.
You're not duplicating what you have in Trello, for instance, in your paper notebook.
More a trigger of, I know I need to do that, and I know that information is in Trello for me.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, grocery shopping, pick up Mary D, which we're doing tonight. I'll write sometimes, you know, campground information or whatever. I'll also do that on a Google Calendar. So, I mean, you try to be in one place, but you need to be in multiple. The Google Calendar is easy for sharing with family, so they know where we are when we're camping.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Probably the biggest challenge for me is just the self-discipline to keep it up. Mm-hmm. And
how long have you been doing it?
Oh, years and years, really. And just that starting Monday morning, transferring the things that I didn't complete last week, that's more the discipline side of it. Writing down things to do in the moment is not hard. It's keeping the train running week to week kind of thing.
And kind of the fun stuff that you do is you know, kind of makes it more attractive to get into, you know, on a regular basis. But I would say, and this is just from my own experience, just the fact that you've got something that you're writing down and crossing off and you're making some notations of accomplishments is another motivator for me, because I don't, you know, do a lot of the, you know, the artsy stuff in it. It's just very fun, you know, as we'll hear next week, it's just very functional and, you know, kind of that good cleansing exercise. Even writing stuff down that you did that you hadn't written down before you did it, you know, I find is somewhat therapeutic.
I was just going to say that. We have a whiteboard on our refrigerator, so we could make to-do lists and things like that. We have a whiteboard space, and my mother-in-law teased me about, well, you better go write it, because we would always have lists up there as we were renovating and things. You have to write it on your list so
or
you can check
happen,
it off.
Right?
That's right. So, yeah, I do. I'm guilty of that as well.
So that's first part of our discussion. We kind of had some fun and had great participation, I think, of a survey question where we kind of asked, what systems do people use to manage their tasks? So we threw this out there and we got about a dozen or so responses all over the board. So we wanted to mention a few of those. A couple came back, said they bullet journal, right? One looks like she's a relative of yours.
My daughter-in-law, yes. We have that shared heart.
That's neat. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Steve Daly. But he's not a bullet journal-only kind of guy. He uses a product called Asana. But there are a bunch of other stuff. And some are kind of app-based. Some are web-based or both. Some are Mac-based. Some are Windows-based. They're kind of all over the board. So let's just go through a couple of these. One that came up a couple times was OmniFocus. OmniFocus has been around a long time and has been kind of the premier task management tool for Mac users. And I can't speak from personal experience, but just in talking to people who use it, it seems to be very well-rounded and kind of the go-to for people who are really serious about getting their projects in order and managing their tasks, especially if they're Mac-based. So that came highly recommended by a couple of folks. There were a couple that kind of had a cross-section, some even using things like Google Calendar, thought was interesting, where they're managing tasks through calendar, repeating tasks, which Google Calendar is very good at, separate calendars for different things. So I thought that was interesting. A couple of people talked about Google Calendar, Google Drive, Dropbox. So, you know, keeping track of things like that.
And there's reminders built in there,
yep,
too.
That's so. Right. Mm-hmm. Yep, the whole Google ecosystem. One that I thought was pretty interesting that was brought up kind of twice, Microsoft has now a to-do app. So I was playing with that a little bit before we started recording here because I hadn't had any real experience with it, and it's a fairly new product. And if I'm not mistaken, it is really kind of leveraging the technology from another one that was recommended, Wunderlist, or Wunderlist, W-U-N-D-E-R, List, because they look very similar, and Microsoft bought them back in 2015, so I think they're finally bringing those in. One of the neat things about the to-do app in Microsoft's Office suite is that it works across all their different productivity tools. So if you create a task in to-do, which is what they call it, it also appears in their project task list, which is called tasks. I was wondering what the difference was. But it also appears in Outlook. So regardless of what you're using, that task is going to appear on the list that you put it on in whatever app you're using that's Microsoft based, which I think is really important. So when I write something down, I want to have it wherever I am. And that's why, as I'm going to talk about next week, you know, the paper journaling or, you know, putting it on paper is fine, but you know, I have to carry it with me all the time. And, my system allows me to have it on my phone or, you know, wherever I am. So I've got a shopping list. And people can also collaborate, too, which is another benefit. What did you find interesting about some of the responses, Sally?
Well, I just was overwhelmed by how many there were. I mean, it's a big space, and there's a lot of people that feel strongly. I think once you adopt something, unless it's really rubbing you wrong, you're going to, you know, invest in it and feel excited about it. We heard about Freshdesk, which I hadn't heard of, AnyDo, Todoist, like you said, OmniFocus, Wunderlist, all of those. Lots of digital opportunities to keep up with task lists. I remember us talking about Remember the Milk. I mean, there's so many. I think Rob Gunther mentioned that he uses Follow Up Then, which is basically an email way to remind yourself of things. So just a variety of things. And once you adopt one, I can see, you know, being pretty loyal to it because you put a lot of effort into your to-do list.
Yep, there was one that was mentioned that I had never actually heard of, Monday.com, which I thought was interesting. So because I thought I'd tried them all and kick the tires. But as I mentioned at the top of the show, I think there's one born every day here. So
it's kind of funny. I was looking for all the links to all of these that people, and Monday.com kept coming up in the Google ads for almost everything I was searching for. So they're really advertising Monday heavy because it came up a lot.
Yep. And then a lot of people talked about doing different things on different platforms. So you've got one on your PC or Mac, and then you have an app that you use that goes along with it, or how they sync together. I think somebody mentioned using OmniFocus, but also using tasks or reminders, on the iPhone for personal stuff, which is kind of an ongoing question. And you addressed it because you said you meld, in the same notebook, personal and professional, and I think a lot of people have that question too. How do you, you know, do you keep those separate? And I think the answer is different depending on what people are comfortable with. So, so big thank you to everybody who responded. That was an awesome list that we got back, and Not a lot of consensus. They're all over the board, right?
So if you're looking for one, check out the show notes, wellstech.wells.net. We'll have links to all those great things, plus a link to my beautiful Erin Condren notebook that I use. So if you're
Can you only get that like through Amazon or get that at bookstores?
That's a great question. Erin Condren sells it through her website, erincondren.com, and she has the daily planners as well as the notebooks that are blank. But Staples started carrying her stuff only in Staples, and that's where I found like stencils and things like that. The deal with Erin Condren is that you get this personalized cover that's laminated and hard and has your name on it. Mine has llamas on it as well, but every year it's a big deal for me to pick out my new cover. And what's cool about them is they're interchangeable.
Kind of a tear-off spiral concept. There.
So I can use some of my older covers, and I have some really fun ones from through the years. So
that's holds up pretty well.
Oh, yeah. They hold up great. Well, so one of the appeals of her notebooks. Cool. So check it out if you're looking for one.
All right. So tune in next week for more conversation about task management and bullet journaling. Thanks for sharing, Sally. News and Tech is our next segment, and so we've returned to our regularly scheduled podcast, and we have a News and Tech segment each and every week if there is some news worth to share. And Twitter was in the news. They've been in the news a lot lately, but one of the things that I found interesting, which I hope actually becomes a reality, is the headline of this article is Twitter Confirms Test of Personalized Unfollow Suggestions. I think one of the challenges of Twitter is you get all excited and you try and follow as many people as possible, and then your feed gets so swamped with stuff that you just really don't have much interest in, or it's kind of peripheral, you know, information that you really didn't need to see at that particular time. Now, you can create lists in Twitter and kind of personalize it that way, but what Twitter is exploring, and they haven't confirmed that they're going to actually make this happen, is through some analysis that they would do on their software, or examining your usage, they would make recommendations not for following people, but for unfollowing people. So if you're not interacting with a particular Twitterer, you know, retweeting or replying or in opening up and clicking on links, those kinds of things from a tweet, they may suggest, well, you're not doing anything with this particular person or this particular account. You may want to consider unfollowing it to kind of clean up your feed and make it a little bit more useful, which I kind of like. I follow a lot of different people, but I think it would be helpful for them to at least maybe make some suggestions saying, hey, this would clean things up a lot. Now, I could probably do that manually, but this seems like a neat feature.
Yeah, it does. I'm just reminded of my favorite social media for handling that kind of thing. You know who does a really good job of that is Pinterest. They are constantly analyzing and telling me boards like the boards I follow and things like that. Maybe not the unfollow side, but you just don't get as much from the things that you aren't really frequenting. So they're constantly helping you
about it,
find things that you look at a lot.
Right, right.
So,
yep, I've noticed that too, the limited use I have of Pinterest, but I see. And then the recommendations typically are pretty right on.
They find some really good stuff for me. Yep. So
unlike Facebook, which is
another story for another day.
Yeah, another podcast. All right, let's move on to Wells Now. And that's a segment where we kind of look around the Wells world and identify either events or new applications or things that you might be interested in knowing about. So, Sally, what did we find for our Wells Now segment?
This week we want to share that there's a conference coming up that folks might be interested in. It's the Wells National Multi-Site Conference. And by multi-site, they mean congregations that are meeting in more than one location, I believe, and how they're managing that. So it looks like they've gotten nearly a dozen speakers from some of the most experienced churches and their pastors, and just to share their experience and help others who might be looking at the challenges around running a multi-site location. So it's for everyone, not just pastors, congregational leaders, any lay people that are interested, regardless of whether you're doing it currently or how far along you are in the process of being a multi-site congregation. It's happening in the Pewaukee area, so right here near Milwaukee at what is currently called the Country Springs Hotel and Resort. It's actually going to be changing names before the conference happens, but if you guys are familiar with Country Springs, that's where it's happening, and you have until October 10th to get registered. So covers the dates of November 12th through 14th, and looks like meals and everything are included. So definitely come take
advantage of that. Yeah, this is not the first time they've done that. Interesting conference. It's almost kind of an evolution. Not that there aren't going to be daughtered congregations anymore, but it's a little different, you know, I think, take on how ministry might grow, and these multi-sites are make a lot of sense in some situations. So that's interest is if that is of interest to you, check that out. We are up to our picks of the week, Sally, and ladies first. What's your pick?
My pick this week is something called Google Alerts. I'm sure there's many, many Google products that I'm not aware of, but Google Alerts is one that I've been using for quite some time, and I just kind of realized it because it's just something that shows up in my email box regularly. So what this allows you to do is basically camp out on a search term. If you're interested, for instance, in following anything that comes up about your church or school across the internet, you can set up a Google alert, give it that desired search term, and it will email you anytime something new comes up. I have Google Alerts set on all my family members' names, so if anything were to come up, and oftentimes it's a different Sally Draper, one from Mad Men in particular comes up quite often, but that's a different story. But yeah, different things that we like to follow. I could set up a Google Alert on Wells Tech, and then we would get email, and you can tell it to email you immediately or once a day or once a week, whatever frequency you're interested in. Very easy to do. You just go to google.com/alerts, type in a search term that you want to create an alert about, and then configure those settings of how often you want to receive information about that. And then it'll just show up in your email box.
Yep. So it's simple. One of those things that's been around a long time because I've done the same thing for my name and others. And I thought there was maybe a year or so ago kind of a rumor that they were going to discontinue that, which would have been too bad because it's super, I think it's super useful.
Handy,
And real, like you say, really easy to use and just kind of works, you know, in the background, and it'll scour the internet for your search term. And you know, we here in the Senate office want to keep track of when Wells is in the news or other Wells congregations, so our communication services offices takes a lot of a big advantage of this as well. So a really helpful tool.
There's settings where you can tell it to search just news or blogs or the web or video, and then you can tell it to search just the United States if you want, or
the
globally
world. Which comes in handy because Wells is a town in Austria, so you get a lot of Wells Austria news if you
don't they have really large fish or something.
Yes.
There's always the Wells catfish or something
right.
like that.
Exactly.
Yeah, funny stuff.
Good fishing there apparently.
Yeah.
So. My pick of the week is actually a series of hardware products from Microsoft, and I've mentioned the Surface line before, but I was just reminded of it because the computer that I use most often.
Hello there, Mark.
Oh, there goes Siri. And I don't know what I said to alert her, but I've been using the Surface Pro lineup for about 4 or 5 years, and been overall very impressed with almost everything that they've done with this product. First of all, the portability of it, the battery life, the keyboard, the trackpad, the screen. There's a pen that goes along with it, although I don't use that a lot because I use the iPad. But they don't have just the Surface Pro. They have a whole series of laptops now, or devices. I don't know that I'd call them all laptops. But one of the newest ones is a Surface Go, which actually brought the price way down. I believe it's in the $400 range for an ultra-portable, I mean, 11 or 11.5-inch unit that has a the same keyboard and quality built in. There's something also called a Surface Laptop, They claim 14 and a half hours of battery life. And then there's also a Surface Book 2, which is a detachable screen, so you can have, similar to the Surface Pro, a tablet-only experience. And then they have some other products as well. But it's my pick because I think the pricing on it has come down enough to make it a viable option. And I've said this before, that it's really important to pick a device that you're not struggling with all the time, that you're not fighting with. Get something that, because you work on the computer a lot, it spend the money, or you know, budget for it through your congregation or school to get a decent quality machine that you're not struggling with. And I would say these are good units in that regard. You could easily go to Best Buy and find a $300 Dell or Asus or whatever, and it would work okay.
Until BitLocker locks you out of it. That's what happened to me. That's with right. My cheap
is that right?
Dell. It sure did.
And then you're stuck.
I lost it, yep.
And, but these are Microsoft made, and you pay I'd say you pay a little bit of a premium, although I don't think you pay as much of a premium as you might on an Apple product. But they're just as good a quality, and I think you really get what you bargain for here with a Microsoft product. So I can't say that I've tried all of their Surface products, but my experience with the Surface Pro has been extremely positive, and I've had zero problems with it. If you're looking for a recommendation, and kind of a mid-level recommendation as maybe a call worker or a knowledge worker within a church or school setting, I would say a Surface Pro with an i5 processor that's kind of middle of the road, 8 gigabytes of RAM. I did just a quick price check on that, and it's about $1,100, and that's the special student or teacher price, which is fairly easy to qualify for. So we'll have a link to the Surface page in the show notes. But if you don't want to go that high, there are lesser options that I think are of good quality as well. So highly recommended. Again, you know, I can certainly vouch for the setup that I've had for the last 3 or 4 years, and ultra portable, and I like to basically use it while I'm in the office, take it to meetings, those kinds of things. I don't, one knock against the Surface Pro line is I don't typically use it at home, because when I'm working at home or at night, I'm usually on the couch. I don't sit in the office, and I don't find that the kickstand model is real comfortable sitting on the lap. So a more traditional laptop is, I think, better if that's the way you do a lot of your work. And I know a lot of teachers will do lesson plans or whatever on the couch in the evening or whatever. I know my wife does, and this wouldn't be as comfortable as, you know, a MacBook Air or something like that. So
a little bit of Draper experience with the Surface Pro line. My son got the Surface Book.
Okay.
So, and he's been really pleased with that, and that would solve your problem because it does work like a laptop, but he likes the detachable screen that he can use like a tablet as well. So he's been real pleased with that.
I would say the pen, they don't all come with pen now, but you can purchase the pen, but I would say it's a credible device for taking notes. It's a little bit more of a little bit of a lag, I'd say, compared to, let's say, the Apple Pencil on an iPad. It just seems like there's a little distance between the tip and the where it registers underneath. So there's a little bit of an offset. So it doesn't feel exactly like writing, you know, on a piece of paper. But I would say for most note-taking, you're not going to, you know, draw, you know, the next masterpiece. But I think for good productivity kinds of things, I think it works pretty well. So.
One more note, Martin. I'll just type like plain donuts. You know, your phone did go off during the podcast.
Was it asking about donuts?
Maybe so.
All right. So that is our picks of the week. Let's move on to a ministry resource.
Happy to share with you something that's pretty near and dear to my heart, actually. I've had the privilege over the last year and a half, to work with the good folks on the Campus Ministry Committee of Wells. And we've been working behind the scenes diligently to update the database interface for students and for the workers here at the CMM, and for all the pastors and congregations that use the student data that's collected to reach out to college students around the country. So We will definitely include a link in the show notes because it's a great time of year to encourage any college students that you know to head over to the Wells.net site and sign up for our campus ministry resources. It allows the congregations near them to be connected to them, and they also can get free copies of our free subscriptions, regular mm-hmm. copies of Forward in Christ magazine, as well as the Meditations Daily Devotion right. booklet. So a great service that's offered by our campus ministry area.
Yep. And we'll have a link to that in the show notes. And we're making improvements every day.
All the time.
Yep. Community feedback. We had some great feedback, actually, from our Google groups, Google schools, Office 365 schools areas, which we keep an eye on because there's always some great conversation there.
Definitely. From Professor James Karlofsky, we'll make mention and link to an article about new features in Google Classroom. It includes a short video, and the guy demonstrates some really nice things about commenting on students' assigned work. So say they've submitted some Google Docs in response to an assignment. You can actually use a hashtag as you're adding comments and add comments from a comment bank. So if you're regularly saying the same thing over and over, you build your comment bank and you can use a hashtag to bring up those comments, right. not have to retype them time and time again.
Like remember I before E except after C.
There you go. Yeah. That's a great comment. And then there's also the ability to scroll between the submitted assignments. So if there's 20 Google Docs you've got to go through, they've put little arrows in there, Martin, kind of like in Outlook you can go between your email messages mm-hmm. easily without having to close one and open the next. Now you can just click the arrow and it goes to the next student's turned in assignment.
Right.
So really short video there on that page that James linked to, and it's a great explanation or demonstration of those new features.
Awesome.
Then we had some chatter over on the Wells Tech Google group, and it was specifically about Office 365. So I think it was Peter Iles, who's at Wisconsin Lutheran High School here in Milwaukee, that was asking about getting it set up, and there was other discussion around accreditation requirements for qualifying for Office 365.
Right.
And people brought up that you can also qualify as a nonprofit for really great pricing. So really good discussion, helpful links shared there. And we can include a link in the show notes to that email thread, basically, that happened on the Wells Tech Google group.
Yeah, super helpful, especially because this whole thing can get real confusing real fast
with
anything with Microsoft licensing. So it's nice to reach out, and it's nice to have a resource like this of people who've gone down that path, because you can kind of get stuck with a plan you don't need and save a lot of money just by asking the right people. So,
mm-hmm. And another very active Google Plus community is the Wells Office 365 Schools community. And just recently, Perry Lund from Evergreen Lutheran High School shared an article, Microsoft Teams Getting Started Guide for Education. So if you're in that position, brand new school year, and you're trying to get up to speed on Microsoft Teams to use in your school community, this walks you through it step by step, includes screenshots and all kinds of other goodness to help you get started. So check it out.
Great. And Sally, how would somebody offer community feedback if they were of that mind?
Oh, how wouldn't they? There's so many ways.
Exactly.
But the best way to go is to head over to our Wells Tech website. That's at wellstech.wells.net. And there you'll find all kinds of links to our social channels. You'll see Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, Google+, Twitter. And you can certainly make comments using hashtag WellsTech in any of those locations. You can also email us directly at wellstech@wells.net or leave us a voicemail. There's a link on the show notes page to do that as well.
Very good. So please take advantage. We'd love to hear from you. Our video of the week is how we close out every show, and I've got a sneaking suspicion it might be the way we started the show on bullet journals.
Yes, because you need to see these amazing things that people do
and they are,
with
they
their
are
paper bullet
amazing.
Journals.
Yes.
I found just one person on YouTube, and there's a bunch of them to pick from, but Amanda Rach Lee is out there doing monthly spreads and showing all her doodling and fun stuff. So I have a couple of videos from her. You can also find her on Instagram, or you can just head over to Instagram and search on Bujo, B-U-J-O, hashtag Bujo. And I did that and found 1.9 million posts.
Holy mackerel.
With hashtag Pujo. So people are into this, and for a good reason. I think you'll see some really pleasing designs and things that creative folks come up with. So
get you inspired.
Yeah. That's right.
All right. Next week, as we already mentioned, we will return to our discussion of bullet journaling, and I'll kind of talk through how I do it, digital style, and hope you will return for that. Thanks for tuning in this week, spending a little bit of your morning, afternoon, evening, whatever that is for you. I really appreciate your continued patronage and look forward to talking with you again next week. Bye-bye, everybody.